G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White, good morning.
Good morning, Harf. Tom Bell Chambers, a Launceston boy from down in Tassie. We'll talk to him about this, but when he was in his under-18 year, he was touted as one of the most talented players for the upcoming draft. But he was seen as a little bit lazy, but very, very talented. And got picked up relatively late in the end by Essendon. But, look, injuries unfortunately punctuated his career. But when he was up and firing, he was a very good player for Essendon, but also a very, very popular member of the team. Very, very popular member. So I don't think it's a surprising exit from AFL football, but it'll be an emotional one because of the impact he's had on a number of people.
So, yes, popular member, yeah. The Bombers, 'tis the season. But don't worry about that sort of stuff. Don't worry about that sort of sporty sort of stuff, because there's other action we need to get to today. There's other action, I think. Isn't there? Yeah, baby!
It is.
On this day,
yes, it is.
Did you know? On this day. In fact, I'm going to ask you a question.
I was born.
1977, on this day, there's a very handsome young man born somewhere in Melbourne town, I think it was, not quite sure which hospital, but he was you. Fantastic. Happy birthday, Whitey.
Thank you. I used to get excited about these days, but now it's just very depressing because, 43. That's bordering on mid-40s.
It's close. It's close.
Well, some would say it is mid-40s, but... yes, as my kid said to me last night, you're an old man. And then James said, yeah, you're a fat old man. And I thought, that's great, mate. Thank you.
James? I need to talk to him.
I think you do.
I need to sit him down.
I think you do.
That's unacceptable from him. We're all about positivity and moving forward strongly together. That's not helping, James.
Sledged by my kids already is a sort of a sign of things to come, I think. Anyway.
Tend to happen.
I've got a good birthday present, I think, already.
What do you got?
Gareth Bale looks like he's going to go back to Tottenham. Now, I've been checking this for days and days days and have for a number of years, hoping in the transfer window he would come back to Tottenham. But the news this morning suggests that it might actually now be legitimately happening. So if you are a Tottenham fan or just a fan of a really good footballer coming back to the Premier League, this might be happening. So he's a very expensive conveyance. So they're trying to work out a creative way of getting it done. But Real Madrid, where he's been playing for a long time, have apparently taken all his shirts out of the store. And which is always a bad sign for him staying at a particular club.
Yes, never fantastic.
And he might be coming back. They're suggesting it might be a loan situation, but more might develop in the next little period. But I've woken up to that news, which is a really good thing. I'm happy about that.
His value has dropped significantly in the last couple of seasons, hasn't it, on the global stage?
Yeah, it has, and a lot of that's got to do with the fact that Zinedine Zidane, who is the coach of or the manager of Real Madrid, hasn't really seen eye to eye with him over the last couple of years, and you know, he's spent a lot of time playing on the bench or not playing at all, and all those sorts of things. And there was time where he was injured, but he was playing golf and got busted doing that, and all sorts of things. It hasn't been a great period of time for Gareth. He almost went to China last year. And we're talking about Gareth Bale, not because he's going back to Tottenham, but he's one of the most highest paid footballers on the planet. And he was on the bench a lot of the time as one of the highest paid players on the planet. It's hard to say that very early in the morning. We'll see how that plays out.
Rightio. Well, that is a happy birthday present. Now, what's on in the day for you? Because we had Campbell's birthday not too long ago, and there were balloons everywhere, and there was a festival of party pies. There was hotcakes for breakfast, Macca's variety. What's on the menu today?
Yeah. In our household, you get to choose the fare for the day, and I'm comfortable in saying that I'll be choosing very similar things to what Campbell did. As an 8-year-old, so It'll be McDonald's breakfast. That'll start things off. And then we'll just freestyle from there. Who knows?
Any dirty bird action? Any dirty bird?
KFC.
Yeah.
It's a chance. It's a chance. It's on the radar. Even I have hesitations about a double up fast food situation on the same day. But it has been discussed. we had a roast last night. I've got roast beef sandwiches as an option. Fresh white bread with roast beef.
Nice.
And tomato sauce type setup for lunch. So I know that's there just sitting there.
Nice.
Should I go down that path? But
that's a delicious lunch.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday. Yeah. Did you know that you share your birthday, you'll love this, with another famous media identity in Australia, the magnificent Nerilee Meadows. Well, happy birthday to you and to her. Happy birthday, Nez. 35 today, Nez. You've worked together at the ABC, the national broadcaster. You'd be mates. You're sending each other text messages this morning. Happy birthday. Do you have a race to get in first?
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Nerilee's going over. She may have already left. Going over to cover the IPL.
I saw that the other day, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that. Out and about.
Yes.
Out and about.
Who else is on the 16th of September?
Well, I'm not going to do music
play
ones
that
because,
through the day as part
yeah,
of
we'll
the,
do some music yeah. ones through the morning. If there are any other people that aren't music people, David Copperfield, US magician and illusionist.
David Copperfield? Was he married to Claudia Schiffer?
He was that him? Yeah, he was. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, I think so.
Is he still married to Claudia Schiffer? I don't know.
I don't think so. Those marriages don't tend to last too long.
Funnily enough, you are correct. No, so Mickey Rourke, US actor, retired boxer. It's basically you, isn't it? Really, in a nutshell, that's you. You're a boxer, retired actor sort of fella. He's 68 today, Mickey. Mary Kustis, Effie from Acropolis Now and Greeks on the Roof. She's having a birthday today. Amy Poehler, another US actress and voice artist. She's 49 today. And you'll love this. On this day, Jingle Bells was copyrighted by James Pierpont of Boston in 1857. It was originally written for a Sunday school performance, and James Pierpont went on to become a squillionaire because of Jingle Bells. And all the varieties that have been since in the schoolyard ever since. Jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin flew away. All that sort of stuff. Like, Mr. Pierpont was making squillions of bucks. So you're having a good day. And there's a lot of music, people. We could have a lot of songs today. Lauren Bacall, it's her birthday as well. Or it was her birthday. She passed away in 2014. So you've got a very, very famous birthday on Wednesday, the 16th of September this year, Wednesday. But happy birthday to you, Whitey. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Thank you very much.
Now, you talked about Tom Bell Chambers before, and Cade Simpson announced his retirement yesterday from the Blues as well after, 342 games or whatever it was for the Blues. He's decided that that's enough for him.
Has he decided or has Carlton decided?
Well, I think he decided. Pretty sure he sort of worked it out in the end. I don't think they were stopping him. Would be my assumption on that. I don't think they'd be begging him to stay, even though he's been an outstanding servant of the football club and 18 seasons, 342 games. But I'm pretty sure it's his decision.
Okay, because, I mean, you're right. I mean, he's been a terrific servant for Carlton for a long time. And what stands out to me is just his consistency. And reliability, I guess, would be the two words that stand out for me. And also that he really embraced the long sleeve jumper, which I'm really pleased about. But I think it's an interesting. The reason I say it's interesting, and I don't want to sort of take the gloss off Cade, but you know, what does that now mean for Eddie? If Cade's not going to go on, does that mean that Eddie falls into the same category of look? You know, you could still probably play, but is that in the best interest of Carlton? So yeah, interesting time. for the Blues in the next 24 hours, because a lot of these retirements, Half, have to be announced before the weekend, because, you know, when they're popular members of a footy club, there needs to be a farewell
yeah,
type
right.
situation. So, yeah, interesting. I wonder whether there's any other ones that might surprise us today or tomorrow when the announcements are made.
Yeah, well, I reckon there'll be surprises. There you go. Don't know. And this is the thing, and I imagine, and we did touch on this yesterday, if you haven't got any confirmed list numbers, it does make it a little bit more difficult.
Absolutely, it does.
This scenario, and this, we know this is an unusual year, we're agile and flexible and all that sort of stuff, but I think particularly for servants like, I mean, Cade Simpson, there's only one other player who's played more games than him in the league currently, it's Sean Burgoyne, who's going to play again next year. So for that level of commitment to a club, let alone the game, and impact on a lot of people, you want to be able to acknowledge them straight away. So, yeah, this list decision, this number of players on the list and footy department stuff needs to be sorted out, well, yesterday, so that players can start to make their calls and clubs can start to make calls on the future of these club greats. And I think that's right that they get this right, the AFL, and with their information at the moment to the clubs. There might not be... I know it's a horribly difficult task, considering the state of play at the moment, but, gee, you don't want to leave legends of the game and club icons just hanging.
No, exactly right. And I was surprised with Ben Stratton, I must confess, and he's had a poor year. There's no doubt about that. We didn't really talk too much about that yesterday. I just wonder whether if Hawthorn had their time again, he wouldn't have been made captain, because I don't think he's been a great player since he's been captain. It's almost like the extra responsibility has taken away his freedom as a footballer, because he was an outstanding player, Ben Stratton.
No, really was.
And, you know, for Hawthorn people would know that for a long time he was very, very underrated with his ability to play on a variety of different players. But I just reckon since he was captain, it just didn't quite work for him.
Well, he hasn't been the player... But Hawthorn haven't been the team, so I think there's a bit of a hand in glove situation there for Ben Stratton. But you're right. I mean, he was one of the most versatile defenders in the competition. He could play small, he could play tall, he could play medium. He'd attack, he'd defend, he'd intercept, he did everything. Ben Stratton, he was a brilliant player.
He was spot on. He was, but it was a surprise when he was named captain. And again, we're talking about popular players. Internally, yeah. It wouldn't have been seen necessarily as a surprise internally, but externally it was seen a bit of a surprise. But some people don't embrace leadership or can't play well when they're given that extra responsibility of leadership. They're better to just be kept to their own devices and do it their way. And Ben did it differently. He's a different cat. And I just wonder whether maybe he felt he had to change or he had to be different to what he was, and that affected his footy. I'm not sure. Anyway, very, very good player. Triple premiership player.
My word. 200 games and his last game this week. Off the SMS, you talked about David Copperfield and Claudia Schiffer's marriage not lasting. The Baker says, those marriages don't last, but I'd take a while I had it. Good, interesting feedback from the Baker. Someone wants to know, has Cade Simpson played the most losing games ever? And I think that's Kevin Murray. Oh, no, he just overtook him. We did that the other couple of months ago.
Yeah, he did.
You're right.
Yeah,
that's spot on. He has played the most losing games ever.
There's a lot of text message traffic suggesting that KFC is sort of Winks odds tonight for me.
Yeah, it's getting that way.
No, the problem is that the KFC is just, it's too far away from our house. So when you get it back to the establishment, it's just lost its... It's lost its edge. It's not hot enough. The chips are just not quite there. So, no, I don't think it will be, to be honest.
Dave Hussey, the mentor with the Kolkata Knight Riders in the Indian Premier League. What about this? It's 12:23 a.m. in the UAE at the moment. And Hussey stayed up to take our call, which is very lovely of him. But he's also just come back to the hotel from training where they wrapped up their session within the last hour of play. David Hussey... Good morning to you, or good evening. It is good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, very good. Good morning, Half, and happy birthday, Whitey. Well done. You don't look a day over 46, Whitey.
Now, come on. I'm the same age as you.
No, you're younger than me.
No, how old are you, Huss?
I'm 43, but in July. He's September.
So. Oh, yeah. See, I'm March. Yeah. So we're all the same. We're all 43.
Yeah, we're all the same.
Happy birthday to us for the entire year. Good on us. Now, Huss, speak to me about this training situation. You just got back. It's midnight. You've just got back from training.
Yeah, effectively. I've been probably back without telling too much of a fib, probably 2 hours now. We left at about four, and we trained for about 6-7 hours. So it's reasonably long, but the Indians love hitting cricket balls, and we're trying to build up as much volume as possible for the start of the IPL, and our first game's on the 23rd of September. So, yeah, all the boys are fit and firing, and, well, hopefully we lighten the loads off getting closer to the first game.
Now, I understand that the Indians love hitting cricket balls. That's all very well and good. But you just said you just trained for 6 or 7 hours. How do you possibly fill 6 or 7 hours of cricket training? I'm lucky to do 2 laps of the oval, 15, 20 minutes in the nets, and that's about it.
Well, it's worse because you actually do the planning meetings beforehand. So there's another hour and a half because everybody loves talking cricket. So, yeah, it's they become long days, but also enjoyable. It's really nice actually having a purpose again, and you get to work with some of the best cricketers in the world. So I'm very, very fortunate in that aspect.
So, Huss, for our listeners, tell us who is in the Kolkata Knight Rider setup, because it's one of the more one of the bigger franchises in the IPL. Who actually plays for your team?
Yeah, so probably our highest profile player is Pat Cummins, the Aussie. We paid in excess of $3 million US dollars for him. So, he joins the squad in, I think it's about 4 days' time. But then he has 6 days quarantine before he gets out. I don't think he gets out the day before our first game. So he might be a little bit short of a gallop without being saying too much of a pun on a radio racing network. Owen Morgan, we also have Tom Banson, and the local Indian players. Our captain is Dinesh Kartik, who's played a lot for India, and our young gun is Shubman Gill, a young opening batsman who plays for the Punjab Cricket Association, who's extremely talented. And I dare say he'll be out on the Indian-Australian tour this coming summer.
Right, okay. And for you going over there, was there any apprehension about it, obviously, with the coronavirus sort of taking over the world and so few people actually travelling? Explain what that was like and what you did in quarantine.
Very little in quarantine. I had 6 days in Abu Dhabi. I'm actually trying to lose a few kilos, actually, Whitey. I sort of let myself go a little bit. So I'm trying to do as much fitness as I possibly could. Yeah. So it was really reasonably difficult. But no apprehension about coming over to the Middle East or Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Sharjah, where the tournament's played, purely health-wise, I'm fine with that. It was more being away from the family for pretty much 3.5 months. And when you get back to Australia, you've got the 2 extra weeks in quarantine. So it does make it very difficult. But fortunately, we have the likes of FaceTime and Skype, which we can call each other. Well, the kids especially, they're at a really impressionable age. So it's reasonably difficult being away from them.
And what's it like over there in regards to what you can do? I mean, once you get through quarantine, I mean, do you have to wear a mask? Is there significant restrictions like in a lot of other countries in what you can and can't do around the city?
Exactly that. So we're in a bio bubble. That's a big buzzword at the moment. Oh, yep. We wear masks everywhere. We wear tracking devices. We're not allowed to leave the hotel. The pool is off limits, which is really disconcerting because I'm out looking my window right now. I can see this beautiful, cool pool and a beach next door to me, and I can't use either. So it's really disappointing. But these rules are in place. We want cricket to be going ahead, and we want to entertain the people of the world and show how great cricket is. So we're in a really fortunate position to be able to provide entertainment for the world.
Sherelle's on the Zoom. We love chatting to her as part of the team, and I reckon she's been up and about doing her little fitness session, having a shower. She's fresh. Sherelle, good morning.
Good morning. No, I haven't.
You look like you're ready to go.
I do have an excuse, a valid excuse, because the online program that I do is a live session that's run at 7:30.
Right.
So normally that's a great way to start my day. It's actually a very respectable time, but it just obviously doesn't fit into my Wednesday morning.
No,
so I prioritise speaking to you guys over that.
Well, we're very thankful for that. And our listeners are very thankful for that. And you get another hour just to play it later on, that session, at about 8:30.
That's right.
Yeah. At a much more palatable time.
Meanwhile, where the Vixens juggernaut is rolling on, am I allowed to say that? Probably not. We've secured top spot on the ladder, so that's a good position to be in at this stage.
Well, that's a very interesting way for an assistant coach. You don't hear that in football these days, Whitey, saying, the juggernaut's rolling with us at the moment.
Right.
We're going beautifully. But it does take away the pain.
We're an unstoppable
train. It does take away the pain of following the Blues, I reckon, Sherelle, when you've got the dominant force in Super Netball.
It does just ease that slightly. But, it's been a really great season so far for the Vixens. And with my assistant coach's hat on, we all know how much that means when you actually get to finals. It means absolutely nothing, particularly when all the games are being played in the one venue, effectively. It's great that they've done just exceptionally well, particularly, Liz Watson is one of the best players in Suncorp Super Netball. She's been out with an ankle injury and we still had that really great win against the crosstown rivals, the Magpies, on the weekend. So the Magpies got jumped us a little bit at the beginning and we were down 8-0. So they'd scored 8 before we'd even got on the board. So it was a bit of a shaky start. But anyway, they were able to dig their way out of it. And as I said, without Liz Watson, which is impressive.
Yeah, dominant force, as you said, locked away top spot with 2 games to go in Super Netball. And we're back to regulation sort of timelines now, aren't we? It's not the every 3 or 4 days hubville that's been happening for the season to this date. And they should be applauded too. We've talked about the AFL and getting the season off and making it happen through Hub Life and the applauds that have come their way. The Super Netball and Netball Australia, whoever runs these competitions, Sherelle, have done a hell of a job making this happen too, we should say, to this point.
We absolutely should say that. It was very close for the season not getting off the ground at all, absolutely. A lot of people did a lot of work to be able to make that happen. And, you talk about the AFL and potentially the financial rewards being involved in that sport are much different to what it is in netball. But a lot of people have made that sacrifice still to be away in this hub situation. Most of them, it will end up being somewhere between kind of 12 and 15 weeks that they're away in this hub situation. So it's a massive chunk of time. So they all have done an incredible job to get it going. And you're right, we go now to the weekend games only. We don't have the weekday games. And I actually think it'll be a real adjustment for those teams who are up in the hub life to now you've suddenly got this time to think and to ponder your situation. And I think that will be something that the clubs need to deal with and make sure the players are adjusting to.
Yeah, I reckon it's a fascinating way to finish the season. When everything's been so helter-skelter at this point just to get games in to get the season done. And you finish with the last couple of games just back in regulation mode into a finals campaign. So everything will slow down, you would think. Even just the day-to-day rhythm of life will slow down, and that might affect some teams, you'd reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, who knows how it will affect them, and I'm sure they're all addressing it, and certainly at the Vixens we are. We're chatting about that and about ways to cope with that change of, it's a change of pace, it's a change of rhythm, because up until now it's been literally play, recover, have a look at the following game, and then you've either sometimes you had an extra day to get ready, but other days it was when you were playing the next day. So it really was, there was just no time to kind of sit and breathe in that space. So, and then add to that the final structure, which has just been announced yesterday, which is a traditional top four where 1 and 2 play off 3 and 4, and then the winner of 1 and 2 will get 2 weeks off, which will feel like about 4 years, I would have thought, after only having, a day or two off in between games.
Lucas Michelle is an Australian amateur golfer who hopefully is on that track to go all the way and be a star in the world of international golf. Aussie golf is doing great things at the moment. He's making his debut at a major championship this week at the US Open at Winged Foot, and he's been good enough to join us on the line this morning. Lucas, good morning.
Morning, or afternoon from here in York.
Yes, afternoon your time, morning our time. How exciting is it to be getting ready for a US Open, and particularly at one of the most famed golf courses in the States and on the planet in terms of difficulty and reputation in Winged Foot?
Yeah, it's incredible It's going to be an incredible experience for me. Obviously, my first major. I've played in some good golf tournaments in the past. I played the Australian Open last year, and that was an incredible experience. But yeah, the majors are something else, and Wing Foot's certainly known as possibly the most difficult course on the US Open Rota. I think Jeff Ogilvy won with a 6-over par. I think it was in 06. So it's gonna be tricky, and I've seen the rough, and it's super thick. So it's gonna be as much a mental kind of test of fortitude as it is a test of golf skill.
And considering how close you came, I was reading an article about you during the week. How close you came to thinking about doing something else. You were talking about being 25 and you missed your Australian Tour school card by two shots. And now you're 26 and you're playing in the US Open. But things have progressed pretty quickly.
Yeah. So I studied an engineering degree. And when I finished that, I wanted to give golf a good shot for a couple of years because it was always the game I loved so much. And I felt like I had sort of 40 years to do a normal career. So I had this great opportunity to play golf. I've been working, a couple of different jobs and just trying to play as much golf as I can, work on the game. And then when the opportunity came up to play the U.S. Mid-Amateur in the U.S., I took that opportunity and never expected to win it, but ended up coming away as the champion and had all these exemptions into these events like the Australian Open, but also the two majors, the U.S. Open and the Masters. So it's all been... It all turned around very quickly in September last year from being looking like, golf might not be my future to now a point where I really do want to give it my everything and see what can happen.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And, when I'm interested in your situation. So you're over there, your first major, so you don't know exactly how things normally operate. But given we're in the COVID situation, how does that impact your preparation and what you do in the lead-in? Is there things that you would maybe normally do to get yourself into the right physical or mental frame of mind that you can't, given those restrictions?
There's a couple of things. I mean, it's definitely a different tournament than a normal one. We're getting tested. We have to show a negative test to be able to arrive at the tournament, and then we get tested again at the start of the week. So I got tested on Saturday. And then throughout the tournament, we're basically in like a bubble. So we're not allowed to, or at least they're advising us that we can't, go out and go to restaurants and stuff like that. So everyone's sort of eating at home and ordering in food and kind of doing the right thing. So that's okay. We understand that. So I think most players are dealing with that well. In terms of other stuff, like normally I'd like to go to a gym and exercise and maybe do some stuff through the week, which that becomes a little bit more difficult. New York currently still has all their, a lot of their exercise facilities closed. So there are on-site facilities. There's a big sort of tour van that has some equipment in there that we can use, which is good. But overall, I think for me, it's almost more of a familiar experience than some of the top players, because I'm more used to playing without crowds than I'm with them. So for me, it's a little bit of an advantage playing without crowds and all that circus that comes with that. So, I'm sort of taking that as being a little lucky, but at the same time, it would have been great to have a bunch of friends and family here supporting me, which unfortunately haven't been able to get over from Australia, which, it's a shame not to be able to share really that good experience with them.
Yeah, and that's a really good point about that crowd and the differences that you'll all experience. And I assume that it's not usual for you to play a practice round with Adam Scott before one of your tournaments.
No, that was the first time I'd met Adam. he's someone that I had always looked up to growing up. I'm 26 and I think in about 2004, he was really coming out. He won the Players Championship, and he was coming out as Australia's sort of next best thing after Greg Norman. So, I grew up, I was 12 at the time, watching him playing some really, really good golf and got a lovely swing. He's he's a great guy and a great role model. So being able to play a practice round with him and chat to him and learn stuff off him, as well as Curtis Luck, who I actually went to high school, and a friend of mine, we split by stuff, and Ryo Ishikawa, a Japanese sort of superstar as well. So it was just a really fun day yesterday doing that.
Taylor Adams is back with us from the Magpies, locked into another finals campaign. Good morning to you, Taylor.
Morning, Half. Morning, Sherelle. And good morning, Whitey. Happy birthday, mate.
Thank you, Taylor. Thank you very much. What a big day it is. What a big day it is.
Fantastic. Congratulations. Oh.
They're all celebrating in the Hub Life. They're all the Magpies have made cards for you, Whitey. I'm sure they'll be sending them down at some stage. Very exciting.
Yeah, delayed delivery, apparently.
That can happen. That can happen. Not delayed delivery though for a finals campaign for the Magpies. You didn't have to wait till the last round. You locked it in on whenever it was, Monday night against the Gold Coast Suns. Is it pleasing to have locked that in so you can focus on building again now?
Yeah, well, I think we've sort of been building the last month. Obviously you'd like to have the finals locked in earlier, but we left ourselves with a little bit of work to do. And you know, we had a big challenge come up against Gold Coast on Monday, and we were able to get the job done. So, really, really pleasing. We're excited about this week coming up against probably the informed team of the competition, and the team that have been basically the informed for the majority of the year. So, we've got a huge challenge against Port Adelaide, and that'll give us a good read on how we're actually tracking. And we feel like we're building really nicely. And obviously, a couple of the inclusions on the weekend helped, or on Monday helped. But, yeah, excited for what's to come the next 7 days.
And we'll talk about one of those inclusions shortly, I'm sure. But just during the game, when it's getting a bit tight and tense and you know what's on the line, what's the feeling like? Are you conscious of that, or is it just living that moment that's in front of you and it doesn't seep into the team?
Yeah, I'd imagine some of the guys do think about the result throughout the game, and I was probably like that maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I feel like I was able to, as a team, we're able to sort of focus more so on just the, I know it sounds really cliche, the process, but we felt like we were controlling most of the game. You know, earlier they jumped us and we'll probably didn't bring the pressure that we usually bring, and they were able to buffer that. And they played the game. It was basically a wet weather game, given the conditions. The ball was super slippery. I'm not sure what it looked like on TV, but it was really slippery, and they just played a territory game and were able to build some speed off the back of that. So after we corrected that, we looked pretty dangerous. You know, a couple of kicking errors coming out of our back line. Hurst again, which is probably popped up in the last couple of weeks, more so than it did in the early part of the season. Something that we'll look at. But, yeah, we felt really confident in what we could do. And, a bit of brilliance from Coxie and Geordie throughout that second half of the game. It meant that we were pretty dangerous going inside 450.
Taylor, we can absolutely see the cake of soap that you guys are trying to chase around at times, that's for sure. It was pretty challenging at times. And I'm interested in how that feels as a difference. You know, in finals footy, we're used to seeing usually we're in spring, it's a much cleaner style of game, but it could potentially have a real impact given the timing of some of those finals.
Yes, it's something that we've dealt with as a Collingwood player. We've dealt with coming up to the Queensland to play throughout, you know, for forever. The conditions are different, and that's just something we're going to have to adapt to. And each club are working their way through that. I don't think it's makes the spectacle really, really poor. I don't think it's too much of an issue. Same for both teams, but we can't change it now. We're certainly not playing the MCG this year, so we've actually adjusted our training schedules to train, you know, a couple of sessions at night just to get used to that, the dewy ball. But it's funny, it doesn't. When you warm up, it doesn't really feel that slippery. But once everyone starts sweating and the just accumulation of the dew, and it does feel like a bit of a cake of soap. But as I said, it's an issue for each club, and we're just dealing with it. It's not the worst thing that's happened this year, so I'm not going to get too concerned about it.
That is true. I guess if 2020 has given us anything, it's a bit of a perspective about what a challenge really is and the impact it can have. Taylor, I'm interested in the mindset of the club. Now that you've locked away a finals berth, do you think your approach probably doesn't change too much, but does it change the feeling within the group and the comfortability when you're going out there, or do you feel like it'll just be exactly the same regardless?
Yeah, well, the whole way through, we'll still, even, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we're still talking about our campaign ending in mid-October. So our mindset has been that we're up here for a reason and we're going all the way through. You know, so the players were, and coaches and support staff were planning to be here for another 6 to 8 weeks. And that's been our mindset the whole way through. In terms of our on-field staff, that certainly won't change. You know, we make tweaks week to week, depending on the opposition and who we come up against and what we may face. But apart from that, usually we try to focus really heavily on ourselves and make sure that, you know, what we bring as a footy team, we think that we can match it with any club. And, I don't see that changing in the near future.
Taylor, we talked about Collingwood earlier in the week. It just seemed that you were trying to move the ball a bit quicker, or not, maybe not trying to. You were moving the ball quicker on Monday night. How much of that is to do with Jordan Dugowie just being back in the team and being inside 50 and even Mason Cox, I guess, that there's a little bit more confidence to move it quickly knowing what you've got inside that forward 50 zone?
Yeah, we don't speak too much about our offence. It wasn't something that we consciously did. The way we move the ball is just whatever the player sees. We give autonomy to the player with the ball in hand and, you know, within reason. There's obviously guidelines around what we're trying to do. We don't want to be plugging 50-metre kicks into a 50-50 in the corridor or anything like that. But, we like to think that our offence is unpredictable and that's to the opposition, and that's that can be a weapon at times. You know, obviously, anytime we can get the ball deep inside 450 to a one-on-one with Geordie there or with Koshy there or with anyone there, Jamie Elliott, you know, we think we're pretty dangerous. So, and I think most teams are trying to do the same thing. You know, we know that there's a million stats around the NFL. The one is that if you get the ball inside 30, you're a lot more of a likely chance to score. So, I thought our ball movement was okay. Gold Coast defended us pretty well. Stuart he's doing a really good job up there. They're coached really well, and you can see that their players are really buying into their system and the way they defend. And we found it hard to move the ball at times.
It's a chance to celebrate an outstanding career in the world of Australian domestic and international netball. After 17 years, Nat Medhurst has said, "You know what? I'm out. I've had a good time, starting with the Adelaide Thunderbirds all the way through to the Firebirds, the Fever and the Magpies of recent years, and of course 86 caps for the Australian Diamonds." She's a legend of the sport, and she's joined us on the program this morning. Nat, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
We are rapt to have you on the program. It's been a long journey for you, and we've got obviously the world's greatest ever netballer with us on the program in Sherelle, but you're coming close, Nat.
Not even close. No, she is in a whole different calibre, that one.
Don't know about that, but we'll put you in the calibre and the category for today, if you don't mind, because it's been an amazing journey. Have you had a chance? You've been celebrated the last week or two since you announced your retirement. Have you had a chance to sit back and look at what you've done?
I wouldn't say celebrating in lockdown with my baby and partner really took place. It was far from a celebration. I was like, this is depressing. I can't even go to the pub and have a drink with anyone. I've certainly had time to look back. It's I can't believe how quickly 17 years went, and to be a part of some incredible moments in not only netball history but in sport has been, it's certainly, I think, a pinch yourself sort of moment that I actually got to be a part of some pretty incredible moments.
Well, 3 netball world championships would suggest that that's a pretty good impact on the sport, Nat.
I'll take that. I'm not too sure how big my contribution was, but obviously in 2007, that first one, I didn't really get it, to be honest, in those early years with the Diamonds, what it meant, and particularly, at that level and those sorts of big events. And 2007, to beat Bowie New Zealand in New Zealand, and I'm sure Sherelle will agree, it's pretty awesome, and particularly when it's a World Cup. So the way we did that, was pretty remarkable.
Nat, it's so difficult for me to know exactly how to or what to ask you because we've had so many experiences together playing netball and we've had so much time. I mean, you mentioned that World Cup in 07 and I'm interested actually because I've never really asked you this before. What's your favourite memory playing for Australia? What is the thing that is a real highlight for you?
I guess if there's obviously the games and I think 2010, dare I say it, that Commonwealth Games in India, even though we lost, that was just really sticks into my mind, that whole entire experience for probably every wrong reason. That one really does stand out. But obviously, you know, you win all those championships, it's pretty remarkable. But to be honest, a lot of it, it's the stuff that happens away from the court that people don't realise that I think are the funny things. I don't know if you remember that it was, I think it was the, one of the Commonwealth Games, and we actually started a Remember When list because there's just so many things that happen away from the court and funny things that you get to share with your teammates, which are, I think, some of the highlights and things they'll miss.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's those things are sometimes hard to remember when you're living through it. So I love doing that. That's for sure. And you mentioned that Delhi experience, and obviously we ended up playing the longest game in netball history and losing to New Zealand in double extra time. But you're right. It's funny in a career as long as yours and the experiences that you've had that you mentioned that because sometimes it's those tough experiences that just as important to what we've experienced as the highlights.
Yeah, exactly right. And that whole tour, I think it was about 5 weeks that we were away for. I think we got one day off. Thanks, Plum. that whole time, it was
Norma
Plummer. Pretty full on. And, you know, obviously Delhi was just so different. Living in the village, we didn't even know if the games was going to get up. I think a few of us, both yourself and I, included, got a bit of a Delhi belly while we were over there and just everything. And then to lose, as you said, the way in which we did in the longest game ever of netball, I think it just left such a bad taste in our mouths. And then to back it up, to come out the next year, I think we learnt so much from that heading into that World Cup. And then luckily that time we were on the right end of the result.
Nat, it's very rare for a professional athlete to play at four different teams in a domestic competition and for quite an extended period, at least three of them. So you started with the Thunderbirds, the Firebirds, the Fever, and then finishing at Collingwood. Why was it that happened the way it did?
Yeah, I guess to be honest, when I first started, I never ever thought I would leave Adelaide. That's where I grew up. My family is still there. And, you know, I guess things happen and, it's, to be honest, netball's quite different to probably a lot of other sports is that there generally is quite a lot of movement. We don't have long-term contracts. Most of the time they're only 1 or 2 years and people do move quite frequently after that. And all my movements were for different reasons. I loved all my times there. When I was in Queensland, I loved playing there, but it was probably the stuff away from the court that I didn't really enjoy about living in Queensland, that I made the decision to move. And people, I know on the outside, like to jump to conclusions and you'll get called a traitor and everything else from everyone in the grandstand. But, yeah, it was, you know, I've had amazing experiences at all the clubs and I guess enjoyed it, which has allowed me as well to travel around the country. So I'll take that as a positive.
241 games for the magnificent Shinboners between 1994 and 2004. Victorian representative between 97 and 99. All-Australian team member, international rules team member, two-time premiership player, two-time All-Australian full stop. And the only player in the history of the game, Adam White, you may not know this, to play in seven consecutive preliminary finals in their first 7 years of football. These days, dominating proceedings on AFL 360 and Fox Footy coverage. David King, welcome to the Breakfast Club.
Hey, morning, Half. Morning, Whitey. I didn't realise Joey Vignataro was your main man behind the scenes.
Yeah, we're not happy about it, but we can't get rid of him.
There's a lot happening in his family. I mean, his father might be out soon. I read the Informer 3838 thing's going well for him, so let's see how that unfolds.
Yeah, Pops Pignataro. Yeah. Just be careful. You're bad mouthing Pops. He's a fruiterer at the market.
Yeah, well, it's a great disguise. There's no doubt about that.
Speaking of disguises, these days you disguise yourself as a wonderful broadcaster on Fox Footy. Of course, AFL 360 is celebrating 1,000 episodes tonight, which is quite a remarkable feat because nobody ever thought Robbo would make the first show.
I tell you what, many moons ago, I think it was 2010, 10 years ago, Rod Law put these two together, and I'm not sure how it worked, but it did, and they just suit each other, don't they? One does no preparation, shoots from the hip, nails most comments, creates a bit of anger, creates a bit of discussion. The other one, he just continually straightens up. He's just continually putting him back in between the white lines of lane one. And it's just been fantastic. A marriage made in heaven, really.
Well, yeah, I would love to have been in that meeting the first time around when they worked out, who are we going to put on this panel? We'll get Jared. Who are we going to put on? Robbo came to mind. It would have been a fascinating conversation, I reckon, back in the Fox offices.
Yeah, and I think that they were back in the days when we were at City Road there, and it was a tiny little studio, and, you know, we didn't really know what was going on and how big it was going to be. But I think these two, they come into your house every night, don't they? I mean, this is how Tim Hodges, who's the man behind the scenes, describes them. As they're part of your family because you turn the TV on every night, whether you've had a good day, bad day, and you just sit back and just relax. It's part of your natural process of an evening. So it's been huge, mate. It's been fantastic. And so much has happened. So many big stories. You know, always every year I think a coach sacking is the biggest story, and these two love to dissect that. But, you know, even the Neil Danaher annual visit, you know, seeing that MND Foundation grow the way it has been huge. The special one-offs when Buddy Franklin left to go to Sydney. So they've just been up, you know, up with the stories, finger on the pulse every time. And as you said, they've become part of my house.
And so, yeah, unfortunately, Mark McClure has become part of your house too, Kingy. Are you happy about that?
Well, I was doing some research, which won't surprise you. Just we're going to throw up a few things tonight. In the last 10 years, there's been 30 coaches sacked. So we've had a total of 48 coaches through the last 10 years. 30 of them have been sacked. I reckon Sellers has tried to sack every one of them, some of them 6 months in advance of when they actually got sacked, but he's got his fingerprints over sacking every one of them.
I just want to say two things on AFL 360, and you mentioned him before, but the work of Tim Hodges on that program has been short of extraordinary. I mean, it has been his life for the last 10 years, and he's done an amazing job in getting everyone involved in that program, Kingy. But I just wanted to know, will you be on Skype tonight for the 1,000th episode?
I'll let you on this little Skype thing. Jared Waitley's idea it was. Way back in the day. So 2010, you can imagine 2010. Skype wasn't a big deal back then. So they thought, for your segment, we'll get Sellers to Skype in and we'll get you to Skype. You can be anywhere. You can be at home. You can do whatever you like. So after about 2 weeks, I'm hearing every third word. I'm not even knowing what the question is. I'm just making up answers as we go. And then you're watching the show back thinking, geez, I didn't even answer that question. I made that. I don't know what I was doing. Anyway, Rod Law said, look, take it wherever you go. Take it anywhere. And I said, Rod, this is not working. It's not working. I can't hear. And I went to the Ringwood Junior Football Club for a pie night out there, and there would have been 300 kids. And I said to the kids, go your hardest in the background. Here's your chance to get on TV. I couldn't hear a thing. I completely torched the interview. The next week, we're in the studio. It was fantastic.
Smart play by you. You knew exactly like what you were doing.
He had some sort of green tree growing out the back of his head for about 12 months. He wasn't good with the camera positioning and the background scenario, but it was a strange start. It's amazing how things have turned. We're all doing FaceTime now, and it's become part of life again.
Yeah, you're actually trendsetting 10 years ago. 1,000th episode tonight. Amazing stuff. A 90-minute special at 7.30 on Fox 40, Channel 504 on your Foxtel. Kingy, I'm sure your career will get a mention on that tonight because you're a fantastic player with the Kangaroos. And we talked about, through the last 10 years, I reckon, as well, about mature-age players coming in from outside of the natural pathway. You were one of those. You were playing at Port Melbourne before you found yourself into the AFL. Did you think that you'd ever get to the AFL?
No way. Back in those days, the VFA, it was incredibly strong. And I reckon, to be honest, I played in a team that we lost one game for the year in 1993, and I think that was the grand final. I know that was the grand final. It might have been one other game that we lost through the course of the season. And I would have played with, I would say, conservatively 10 guys that were more accomplished players than I, at different age brackets, different phases of their life, maybe not as committed to, you know, playing football as I was, but they were wonderful players. The VFA was loaded with guys that could have played AFL. But you need a lot of luck, Huff. I mean, you need to be, one, drafted, go to the right club, have a position available. All the stars need to align to give you a fair run at it. And I think that most players, you know, at the next levels down, I've consistently said this. The guys playing EDFL, Northern Footy League, you know, whatever league you want to talk about, Eastern Footy League, you know, there'd probably be a dozen to 20 players that could walk in and be, you know, somewhere between 15 to 22 on an AFL list regularly. I honestly believe that, but they just don't get the opportunity. They just don't get the conditioning and the just the pathway provided to them like I did back in the day. So I still think that's a real discussion. They're out there everywhere. You know, but they just need a chance.
Kingy, we were talking, Half and I were talking about this yesterday, about you playing in that famous or infamous VFA Grand Final for Port Melbourne when there was the all-in brawl, which involved a lot of the crowd. It was quite a violent, scary-type situation watching it unfold live on television, and you played a role in that.
Well, I didn't play much of a role. I basically got beat up for the day. As I said, we'd lost one game for the year. Damien Drum was coach. This was the year before he went to Sydney to run the footy club underneath Ron Barassi. We had a really tough team, And we were getting smashed by Donald McDonald's Werribee by 10 goals. The sirens to finish the game was about to go. They kicked the goal. I think the crowd thought the siren had gone, and they charged onto the ground. It had been a violent game. And I just remember standing back, and there was a guy, I'm not even sure whether I should say his name, but his name was Dean Crimes. I stood 3 metres from him. His nickname was Nuts, and I'm not sure that was because of Nuts and Bolts. I think he was actually Nuts. He would have knocked out six people in 4 minutes, I reckon, and I just stood there watching this brawl going on. It was frightening, intimidating, scary for a young player, but what a spectacle it was.
Yeah, I mean, was it legitimately scary to see? Because, I mean, it just got completely out of control.
Yeah, it was scary, and we actually got sent to our rooms. We got sent to the club rooms, and then were made to come back out and finish the game. So if we hadn't stayed in there, the report was that they would have had to replay the grand final because the game wasn't concluded. So if we had have known that, we probably would have stayed in the rooms and got a rematch the next week. But in saying that, look, a lot of people listen to this show won't remember, but the start of the game, our fullback got knocked out, being hit by the opposition's full forward. And it was just a free-for-all. It just descended into a very violent occasion. And, you know, Phil Cleary was going crazy in commentary, I can assure you.
I'm sure he would have been. Goodness gracious. You don't need that in the grand final. You don't need that. So you found your way to the AFL and you walked into one of the great teams of all time, the Kangaroos of 94 and beyond. Talk us through the difference in footy from the VFA to the AFL, King Early Doors.
Oh, like you say, you need a lot of luck. You walked into the Kangaroos, they had a huge 1993. They probably were flag favourites with a week or two to go in the home and away season. Don Longmire kicked, and I think, 98 goals for the home and away, did his knee, or got injured, did a hamstring or something. Two or three other players got injured in their finals campaign run aground. They were always going to win a flag, Half. We all thought over that next 4 to 5 years. And I walked into a team. Back in those days, I don't think we had we had a bye. I mean, all I remember is we had byes at the start of the season. We had a bye in round one, and we had about 8 injuries at the Kangaroos for round one. And Dennis came up and said, listen, son, I don't know how long you're going to be here, you know, 5 minutes, 5 months, 5 years, but you'll make your debut in round two, and we'll see how we go from there. That was Dennis's way of saying, good luck, hope you go really well. hope we can have some success. But from then on, you just jumped on the back of the coattails of Carey and Archer and Swass and these guys, and it was great fun.
Tom Bell Chambers has been good enough to join us yesterday. He announced that his time in the AFL will be complete at the end of this season with the Bombers after 129 games, 13 years in the system. He's done a hell of a job. The big man from Launceston down in Tassie joins us. Good morning, Tom.
Hello, guys. Thanks for the intro. That's very lovely of you to say that. So, no, I'm happy to be here. You know, 13 years is a long time in a football club, and I've loved every minute of it, every up and every down that this football club's thrown my way. So I'm going out on my own terms and with a smile on my face.
Yeah, good on you. And that's a nice way to be able to go out on your terms with a smile, because it has been some ups and there has been some downs. Yesterday, I believe there are a lot of ups. You had to turn your phone off, because this is what happens, Tom, and you've learnt this very quickly. When you retire from the AFL and you're 158 metres tall, local clubs call you left, right and centre.
Mate, I've made 3 coaching offers by about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and the rest started coming through, and I just thought, look, hang 5, I've just retired about 4 hours ago, so let me sit back and then enjoy retirement for a month or so, and then I'm happy to speak to a few people. But no, I understand that's the way it works, and you know, big blokes, mate, they're a premium on that kind of market, so I'm in a good spot.
My word. Just hold out. My advice is hold out.
That's exactly right, hold out. Hey, Tom, I must confess, I was surprised when we looked at how many games you'd played, and I thought it would have been a lot more than that. And you obviously had some injuries along the way. How frustrated were you at times that you just couldn't quite get the crack at it that you would have wanted?
Yeah, I mean, when I first got to the club, end of 2007, 2008 was my first year at the football club, playing-wise. You know, I kind of, as a lot of young ruckmen do, I kind of had to do my apprenticeship under 2 unbelievable ruckmen in David Hill and Paddy Ryder for the first kind of 3 or 4 years. So I learnt my craft there and played a lot of football at the VFL level, which I think actually held me in really good stead. And then once I did get a crack at it, kind of, you know, 2011, 12, 13, 14, those years were probably my more successful years from a playing point of view. And then from there, like, I've obviously, yeah, you know, it's probably been well documented, but I've had some injuries along the way. And yeah, look, it does. It becomes very frustrating that, you know, you want to be out there helping your team. And our club at the time was, you know, we didn't really have too many other ruckmen out there. So at times you have to kind of push through those injuries and play and do what's best for the team. So, look, I look back and think I would have loved to have played 200 or 250 games, but I also look back knowing that physically I gave everything I could to this football club, and, you know, whether it be 136 games or 220 games, I can really walk away with my head held high, and I'm happy with that, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people forget you kicked 28 goals back in 2013 with that combination you had going with Paddy Ryder. I want to just quickly go back to the start. You talked about you having to serve an apprenticeship. We actually talked about you on the show earlier this morning about there were high expectations of you all the way back in your under-18 year. Yeah. And even at Essendon, they drove you pretty hard because they knew what they had. It was almost like you still had to believe it yourself.
Yeah, there was. There was a bit of a I don't know if you guys know the story or not, but there's a bit of a story. So I got looked over initially in the national draft as an 18-year-old, and there was high hopes around me, you know, being drafted kind of reasonably early. And I actually got looked over in that national draft, and Adrian Dodoro got me over to train with the club after the draft had finished. And he sat me down, and I think there was maybe 3 or 4 ruckman training, and a couple others. Dane Zorko was training there at the time as well. So we had some boys training for those rookie spots and pre-season draft back in those days. And Adrian sat me down in the office after a day. I was meant to be there for 2 weeks, and he sat me down after a day. kind of ripped shreds off me pretty much and said, "Nah, mate, you're a pisshead and you're this and you're that." And he sent me home, and I thought, well, that's it, I'm done, you know, like my chances are over. And then I think it must have been a couple of weeks later, I didn't even listen to the pre-season draft in the end because I thought my chances were over. And then I got the phone call out of the blue from Adrian saying, "Mate, we've got you. We want you. We just didn't want anyone else to see you training with us at the time. We wanted to hide you away." So they sent me home after a day of training, and they knew then that they were going to pick me up. So I said, "You could have told me that, mate."
Gee, it's very rare of Adrian Dodoro to do that sort of thing. Yeah, that's very strange.
Now I know him, I'm not surprised whatsoever. But
what a great story that is. I didn't know that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Didn't know you could hide place. That's a good effort by him. Well done. Well done. And just, obviously, one of the massive talking points through your career is the 2016 year and missing that through footy. Yeah. How did that change your aspect, your mindset towards what footy was in your world?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I've been asked this a few times, and I think, to be honest, mate, it's as difficult as it was going through that time. I think it probably gave me a bit more perspective about life in general, and, you know, you can't have your life solely defined by football and, you know, just being a footballer. You need other things. You need balance in your life, and I think that's super important, and I think I learned that as a, you know, 24-year-old, 23, 24-year-old kind of thing. And I think if I had known that from the start of my career, it would have helped me a lot more. So it probably gave me an insight to, yes, football is very important, but you also need a lot of other things in your life to keep you occupied, because, you know, we're in a position where we didn't have football for 12 months, and it was very unfortunate. But in saying that, it probably gave me a bit of an insight into what the real world is, and, you know, it doesn't revolve solely around football.
No, it doesn't, funnily enough, although it's quite consuming once you're in it, exactly. as you well know. So what's it look like going forward? Is there something else on the agenda?
Look, there is, mate. There's a couple of things on the agenda. I can't quite say yet just what they are, but, I've been in talks with the football club, and you know, the potential of staying around the football club. They're keen for that to happen. If not, I think I got offered the coach a kite and roll yesterday. So I don't know if I'll be out in Kite. But no, look, it's going to give me an opportunity to spend a bit more time with my missus and you know, see some family and that kind of thing. And I'll take 2 or 3 months to really relax and enjoy the first couple of months of retirement, and then looking forward to next year, mate, getting stuck into some, whether it be coaching or mentoring or these younger guys at this football club, because I do feel like I have a lot to offer in that space, and that'll also probably give me a bit more time to concentrate on a couple of business interests that I've got as well. So I'm really genuinely excited about what's next for me.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.